Honorable Ministers of the two departments, the Department of Public Enterprises and the Department of Energy, Minister Gina Jumad Peterson and Minister Lynn Brown, ESCOM under the leadership of Mr. Zola Tsi, our guests. I've seen some members from NERSA, officials of the two departments. I see the DG of Energy, GMS, and other officials from the Department of Enterprises and Energy as well. It is indeed a great pleasure for me to welcome you this morning, a beautiful morning in Cape Town. For the first time since we arrived here, we haven't seen the sun. So today we are blessed. It's a really indeed a good morning and a beautiful one, which makes me feel comfortable that our deliberations and discussions will be like today's weather, positive, and help us to assist one another in making sure we have energy in our country, as it is a key for inclusive growing our economy. Without wasting much time, honorable members and colleagues, we will now go to apologies. I hope the attendance register is circulating amongst ourselves. We will request the secretaries of the two committees to take us to the item of apologies. We'll start with the Department of Energy. The Portfolio Committee, not the Department. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Just one apology, Chair. Deputy Minister Mazola, who is unable to attend the meeting due to urgent department matters. Only the one, Chair.
Apology noted. Department, the Committee on Public Enterprises.
Thank you, sir. Do you have an apology to proceed to Department of Planta for muted and for Portfolio Public Enterprises?
Thank you. We will now proceed and request the Chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Energy, Honorable Fikile Majola, to do the introductory remarks.
Thanks very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Mr. Huber. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let me also add in welcoming the two ministers, Public Enterprises and Energy, the leadership of ESCOM, honorable members of the two portfolio committees, officials of the two departments, members of the media. I want to agree with the chair of the session that we should have a good day today and have very good deliberations on the briefing by ESCOM. Honorable members realize that we had decided to bring forward the briefing by ESCOM given the challenges that we currently face, and to do this jointly. We think it is a good sign as the two portfolio committees will be collaborating with the two departments with regard to the issues of energy in general, but electricity in particular. ESCOM is going to be giving us a high-level briefing today as per our request to look at the state of the national grid and the challenges of supply. We do know that there are quite serious challenges at the moment that may be affecting ESCOM, at another level affecting municipalities. We want to urge that our deliberations should focus on trying to help ESCOM to respond to the challenges that our people face currently. We have strong views on issues. issues, but as public representatives, as representatives of our people, our challenge now is to help ensure that ESCOM can be strengthened to respond to the immediate challenges of electricity that our people face. So I hope, Honorable Chair, that we'll have good deliberations today, and thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Chairperson. We will now proceed and request the Minister of Energy to give some remarks. Honorable Jumaat Peterson.
Thank you, Chairperson, Chairperson of Energy and Chairperson of Public Enterprises. I was hoping that Minister Baun would do the first, take the first bite, but I think it's better that I do, and then whatever needs to be added and or corrected, I then have an opportunity to make some very outrageous statements and she'll correct it. So it's better that I start. And yes, no, I really would not do that. Allow me to, Chairperson, to apologize on behalf of my deputy minister. Unfortunately, there was a meeting which we couldn't postpone, which was related to the public and which has been standing in for me. The engagement with Parliament is always welcome, and we appreciate the opportunity to share some views. Allow me to say that the Ministers of Finance, Public Enterprises and Energy have been meeting regularly to have a common approach and a coordinated approach to the matter. We've also been meeting regularly with NERSA and ESCOM, and I'd like to thank Minister Ben Brown for the leadership she has displayed in this matter. We've been having a good share of meetings and regular meetings, so this matter has been high on our agenda, and we are working tirelessly to try and find a solution. ESCOM is a strategic asset in the hands of the democratic state, and our continued interest is one to have sustainability and stability. Department of Energy assists with the critical work around energy provision, policy and planning, and in doing so we aim to ensure that we respond to the imperatives of the National Development Plan. We are working with our counterparts and our colleagues on our current and future energy needs. We like to work in a manner that maintains control over the economic costs and impact of energy, serving national imperatives such as job creation and poverty eradication, minimizing the adverse impacts of the energy sector on the environment. Honorable members, we must appreciate that energy and especially electricity is a key enabler of economic growth, which has been repeated in the committee. We would appreciate that our interrogation of the strategic role and focus of the national utility need to take into account the need for a long-term vision and plan around electricity provision is a necessity. We have been frank in our meetings, objectives, and we have had ongoing engagement and dialogue, and this dialogue with the portfolio committee cannot be undermined. I thank you for arranging a joint portfolio committee and assure you, honorable members, that our common objective of ensuring security supply, thus minimizing the cost, and providing a cushion for the poor and vulnerable are common objectives. We would like to increase access to energy to all our people. Our decisions are based on diversifying our energy supply sources as well as a primary source of energy to diversify. We want to promote energy efficiency, both in industry and households, and we remain conscious of minimizing emissions from the sector, especially in the power generation and transport sectors. Our collective challenge and responsibility is enormous, but not insurmountable. Chairperson, again, thank you to you and the Chairperson of Energy for allowing this opportunity. We've worked together under difficult circumstances before, and I know that your guidance and leadership will not fail us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. We will now proceed and call the Honourable Minister Lynn Brown from Public Enterprise.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to yourself and the Chair, as you can attend, members present here today. Good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Income continues to be a cornerstone of the economy, so it is imperative that the company succeeds if we are to grow the economy. We have developmental challenges in the country. We have economic challenges, and all of that means that we've got to grow the economy. Eskom is faced with, in September this year, we are faced with the agencies either downgrading or upgrading, or giving us a good, a relatively good record. So the company generates, transmits and distributes electricity to industrial, mining, commercial, agricultural and residential customers in South Africa. It's also to municipalities, of course, who in turn redistribute electricity to businesses and households within the area. It also purchases electricity from independent power producers, the IPPs, in terms of various agreement schemes as well as electricity generating facilities beyond the country's borders. Eskom is one of the biggest utilities in the world with over 4,199 megawatts of installed generating capacity. Chairperson, I just reiterate this because I think that's the context within which we have to work. I know you probably know that, but I reiterate it just for getting us all on one page. Eskom is expanding its generation capacity in line with the President's recognition of state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions. And this becomes engine of development, complementing the state in promoting inclusive economic growth. In this regard, Eskom has successfully completed the return service program, which includes Camden, Grootvlei and Komati power plants. Whilst this has added the much-needed relief during the current constrained environment, it is not enough. More generating capacity still requires. Construction is progressing as part of the building program at Medupi, Kusira, Ngula Pump Storage, Sarah Wind Farm Site, and Chairperson, I am confident in Eskom delivering and synchronizing the first unit at Medupi by December this year. In fact, I'm very confident, and I'm hoping that Eskom will tell us that they have my confidence too. It is a well-known fact that Eskom has experienced, and I say it here, while the Oversight Committee watches over us. It is a well-known fact that Eskom has experienced a number of challenges in the recent years. I will not go through these challenges, and I think as we go through the debate, we will highlight many of the issues, and we'll have to answer to many of the questions that members of the Standing Committee would have here today. But this has led me to challenge the Eskom board and management to focus particularly on following in the short to medium term. Amongst these are, A, to establish a sustainable capital investment approach characterized by intelligent investment vision, financial prudency, and commercial sustainability to meet industry demand and customer expectations. Minister Juma Peterson has told you that we are meeting as the three ministers to look at the sustainability plan for Eskom. And you must remember that we have a time frame that's ticking, and that is that by September we have to have a plan in place that makes sense, logical sense to all of us. B, to implement cost containment measures and ensure financial sustainability of the company in the context of the MYPD3 tariff decision. C, to explore and urgently implement measures to improve performance of areas that have experienced significant challenges, in particular power stations. And then, of course, to drive regional integration, economic transportation, is transformation, beneficiation, industrialization, aggressive job creation, and the development of a supply base that meets broadband or broad-based black economic empowerment criteria. The environment within which the company is operating is changing. Eskom needs to be more agile to adapt to this changing environment. I am convinced that the energy policy and regulatory environment has also been characterized by uncertainties, particularly in relation to energy security and the associated costs, future electricity planning, and anticipated end states of the industry. In the light of all above, you will be aware the chairperson, that is the president, has announced the members of the Energy Security Cabinet Subcommittee that will look at all of these matters, amongst other things, and that three departments are working within the energy security cluster and, of course, outside, just to try and get Eskom clarified. Why are you talking about ambiguity? Chair, thank you very much. I leave it there so that we can ask the questions when the members of the standing committee can ask the questions as we go along. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm quite excited by it, actually. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. It is indeed exciting to be in this room this morning. Remember, as we go on with our discussions, the words energy, 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 energy. These are the words from our president when he was doing the State of the Nation address. And our main focus, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, or maybe should I say comrades, because I believe all of us in this room, we are comrades. Unless if I don't understand what a comrade is. Because our common goal, our common goal is to make sure there's enough energy to grow our economy. Comradeship, this is the understanding. We cannot, we might not be comrades in another context, but on this one of energy, we are all comrades. Allow me now to call Eskom.
Chair, before you call Eskom, my apologies. The Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises is running late. He is going to join us at any time.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Allow me now to call Eskom so that they can share with us what they have this morning. I will call the chairperson, Comrade Zola Sozi, to take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Members of Parliament, Ministers, and our guests today. We would like, by your introduction, Chairperson, to just make the point that Eskom is a public company. Eskom belongs to the people of the country. And so it is fitting that we, as the custodians of the management and direction of the company, should be required to account to the people of this country through the representatives as are seated in this assembly. So we thank you for the opportunity to be able to do that. It is very important to us. By way just of introduction, Chairperson, I just want to remind us all of the well-known history of where the company comes from, particularly in terms of its capacity. Eskom had a substantial reserve margin, which is a normal reserve margin for companies in this business, in the 90s. And as we progressed through the 90s into the 20th, it became evident that this reserve margin was being eroded. And this implied, of course, that we needed to add additional capacity in order for us to be able to maintain the reserve margin that we had all along. And as a consequence of that, we got to a point where the reserve margin was so low that the power system became constrained by the time we began a new build program. And so it is in the backdrop of this situation that we find ourselves today, where we've had to take very hard decisions because of the dilemma of maintaining our system as well as providing the power that the country needs. So this balancing act became progressively more difficult. And as a consequence of that, we've had to run systems in our power system which in themselves would not ordinarily run to the degree and extent that we've had. In particular, I'm referring to the open cycle gas turbines in Western Cape here, which were ordinarily running as the peaking stations. But of course, because of the constraints in power, we had to run them for a much longer period, and this put a strain on the company. And hence, part of the financial pressure we're experiencing today is due to that. It is also due to the determination of the MIP3 application, that is the application for the tariff that we had made with NERSA, where, as we all know, we only received half of what we had asked for. And so this additional constraint on us meant that we had to be as creative as possible to try and manage our business in a meaningful and progressive and sustainable way. And so we engaged in a number of activities, the least of which was what we call the Business Productivity Program, where we started to look at savings internally in the organization, how we could save money so that we have sufficient cash to run the business, and other innovative things that we decided we should look at. And so we are then, at this point in time, as the ministers have referred to earlier, engaged in an exercise of trying to look at the suite of solutions that will enable us to deliver on the expectation of our customers, on the expectation of the country, and look after the organization in a progressive and successful and sustainable way. Now, our presentation today will focus on the following issues. We'll start off with an overview of Eskom, and then look at the Eskom financial sustainability, covering some of the issues that I've mentioned. And of course, as we know, generation is the heartbeat of business, and so we'd like to look at the generation sustainability strategy, which we have developed. Also, I'd like to talk some about the new build program update, that is Mzimikosile and Igula program. We're also wanting to talk about the IPD program, and we'd like to deal with some international agreements which impact on the way we do business and on our ability for us to maintain the capacities that we need currently. We'd like to touch on the gas future. We believe that gas is going to be a game changer for us in this business, and so we'd like to be able to engage with some ideas around where we think Eskom benefits from the use of gas. And an area which we'll also touch on will be the issue of municipal debt, because municipal debt is have an impact on our, particularly on our cash flow. So, Chairperson, with those few words, I would like then to ask the Chief Executive, Colin Majira, to launch into the presentation and provide the members with the details. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chairperson, honorable ministers, and honorable members of the portfolio committees, we are going to share the presentation with the financial director seated next to me on my left. I think we will try to move fast to enable sufficient time also for questions and clarifications. We assume that members have received their presentation, and we will try to follow as close as possible set up our presentation, but moving into a bit faster. Chairperson has already given an overview of Eskom, save to indicate what the minister has said as well, that we are a 100% owned state company with a very strong support from government. We supply just about 95% of South Africa's electrification needs.
part of our role is to ensure universal access to electricity. And since we are strongly supported by government, we have been able to connect just over 200,000 households in the previous financial year. We just need to also note, Jefferson, that one of the things that we are going to have to come back to this committee on is a discussion on the integrated results of ESCOM, which is an assessment of the performance of ESCOM in the financial year that has just ended, as well as the financial results thereof. We have already given the integrated results report to Parliament for consideration, and we will await a date by which we will be able to come back here. There will be certain highlights that we will deal with in this presentation, including an indication that we have increased our customers from 5.2 million this year. Our maximum generation capacity is at 42 gigawatts of 2,000 megawatts. We have approximately 360,000 kilometers of cables and power lines. And then we have approximately 50,000 people in our employ. You will see that our generation capacity has a mix of fuel source. The bulk of which remains coal at 85%, with hydro, nuclear and gas accounting for just over 15%. So let's move on to the sustainability dimensions of ESCOM. We have created a mandate that we have based our sustainability dimensions on. It still remains the provision or the guaranteeing of secure supply of energy to a country. We have then said that for us to achieve that mandate, we need to ensure that we are sustainable as an organization. And that sustainability focuses on a number of dimensions, the core ones revolving around financial sustainability, and we'll go into more detail on financial sustainability aspect. Operational sustainability, primarily focusing on the performance of our generation fleet to produce electricity. The third one being asset creation, with a focus on creating new capacity. And here we are referring specifically to a new build program and to the expansion program of our transmission lines. We also have the other dimensions that always guide our work, and this includes ensuring that we are an environmentally responsible citizen who comply with environmental requirements, that we continuously build skills for the future, and that we contribute to the transformation of our country. At the end of it all, we have an overarching responsibility to ensure the safety of our workers and the safety of our communities. So this is a dimension that cuts across everything that we do. We have indicated that at the beginning of April, the board has set out a task team and mandated it to come with a recovery plan that would arrest or respond to the various challenges that was facing ESCOM. That task team, chaired by the board chairperson and with a management team, has subsequently developed a recovery plan for ESCOM, which is organized around four pillars. The first being financial sustainability, which includes the task of optimizing our balance sheet and strengthening it to can be able to enable us to go out to the market and to borrow. for purpose of funding our capital program. The second one is what the chairperson has touched on, which is a business productivity program aimed at identifying inefficiencies within the business, cutting those out and extracting more productivity out of the business using less resources. It's a cost-cutting measure that has the specific objectives of efficiency and increased productivity. We are looking at the hiving off just over 60 billion of our operational budget with this program. The third pillar is operational sustainability, focusing on the recovery of the performance of our generation fleet. The third is delivery of the build program, focusing on the delivery of Unit 5 and Unit 6. The fourth is the implementation of a gas strategy, which the chairperson has indicated is a source that is not fully exploited, and that we are beginning to use to close capacity gap that we are facing in the next few years. I'm going to ask the financial director just to take us through the next few slides as a little bit more detail on the financial challenges that we face and what you are thinking about it. I think taking into consideration that we will still be coming back to deal in more detail with the financial results for the year that just ended.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think as indicated, Eskom is currently faced with the dilemma of balancing financial sustainability, operational sustainability to make sure that we ensure security of supply as well as delivering on our capital expansion program. And I think our challenges regarding the financial sustainability really emanate from the impact of the MYDD3 determination, which was lower than what we expected, but also as well as the declining volumes that we have seen. During the MYPD3 application, we are seeing certain sales growth, 2.9%, and the reality has been that we have seen quite a significant decline. In fact, when we look at the 2013-14 financial results, which we will come back to, you will realize that we have actually lost close to over 9,000 gigawatt hours, which translates to about 5.8 billion of revenue. We have, at this stage, applied to a regulator in terms of the regulatory clearing account, where the regulator currently for the second MYPD 2, which is the MYPD, that the multi-year price determination of 2011-12 to 2012-13. We are in the process of awaiting that decision from the regulator, and the regulator will make a pronouncement in terms of where Eskom has been prudent in carrying their costs against what we had applied for during the MYPD2. However, it must be indicated that we believe from our perspective in terms of the operational requirements that we have, it will the RCA adjustment will not be adequate to help us with our cash flows going forward. We do need to identify additional sources of liquidity for us to be able to continue with our operations. It is also must be indicated that Eskom currently is highly dependent on borrowing, really mainly because the three sources of funding that one would rely on are your tariffs, which would come in the form of revenue, your equity, and debt. Currently, we are highly dependent on borrowing. And as we've indicated, as the Minister indicated, that we do await decisions of the credit rating agency in the next 3 months. But from our perspective, based on the ratings that were done just over a month ago, we do see the risk that we are highly exposed to refinancing of our current debt. And we have been working with the various stakeholders in government as well as our shareholder to put together a plan, as the chairman as NCE has indicated. So as said, that there is an appropriate plan for Eskom that looks at different solution packages and various options that have been worked on, and it really is with our principles for consideration. Eskom's response to the liquidity challenges and long-term financial sustainability, as indicated, would really look at investigating other sources of funding, but also exploring additional debt if possible. However, as I've indicated, that that really would be very much dependent on the credit rating actions and is constrained in terms of affordability of that and in terms of the cost of funding, but also the capacity to borrow any further debt. As indicated, we are from Eskom internally looking at our business productivity, where we would look at efficiencies and improving productivity as well as cutting costs. But we also look at our capital expansion program. As you know, it is quite aggressive in terms of making sure that we deliver on our bill program, but we also strengthen our transmission and distribution networks. But we are doing everything in our power to make sure that we contain the cost within the budget. But what is important, I think, for us is to make sure that the financial, to state that financial sustainability alone would not be achieved through these efficiencies. We really have to move to cost-reflective tariffs, which we consider as the tariffs that must reflect the true cost of supply of electricity. If we move on to the next slide, as Eskom is currently not earning adequate returns, an appropriate returns are critical for Eskom's financial sustainability. We at least require a rate of return that will enable us to be able to maintain and replace our assets, our current asset base, as we need to utilize them. And that return is, in fact, an appropriate return. It's really a key building block to moving towards cost-reflective tariffs. Ideally, this rate of return should essentially be around the cost of capital, which the regulator has also recognized at around 7.65%. We do know, however, that there are different schools of thought on what the appropriate return on assets should be. Some school of thought have said that it should be around 5.2% or even around 4.7%. However, from our perspective, what we're saying is that if you currently look at Eskom's appropriate return at this point in time, it is actually negative 0.53%. And how it is calculated, it is based on the depreciated replacement cost daily basis, which essentially when you look at Eskom financial, then it is in the Eskom financial that we will be sharing. You will notice that Eskom would have actually been making a loss if we were using the depreciated replacement daily basis, which is really the true economic value of our assets, and in fact the basis on which the regulator would calculate the return on our assets. So essentially we're saying that we need to move to a point where we're earning appropriate returns for the long-term sustainability of our business. But at the same time, in the short term, we must make sure that we obtain adequate funding to address the liquidity shortfall that we will see in the short term.
I'm just continuing with the challenges that we face. We need to point out to honourable members that we are going out to seek support and assistance from various parties and stakeholders in government, as well as the committee. But we also have a duty to internally show certain steps that we are taking to clean our own house. And just to indicate some of those steps that we are taking internally is to ensure that we bring Middle East Unit 6 online, on time, on budget. I will go into some more detail on that later. We are accelerating the recovery of our generation fleet to improve the availability and the reliability of that plant to provide energy to our country. We have a recovery plan that is already in implementation. We will share that plan with you. We are identifying new demand and supply levers to offset the high cost of the use of diesel in our CGT plant. We will also be using this additional supply levers to close the gap that will be created as we intensify the recovery of the performance of our generation fleet. But pursuing gas options for both the existing, that is brownfields as well as greenfields, plants inside the country as well as offshore. We continue to identify
regional projects and partnerships with the South African power pool. And we are committed to move our various stakeholders on the new processes to manage the system, including the revised load reduction schedules that will give some predictability to customers as and when we require to reduce their weight and the load. It is critical that we ensure a balance between security of supply, asset creation, financial sustainability, and environmental compliance, and to manage in a responsible way the trade-offs that are unavoidable. We are going to look into the Generation Sustainability Plan. It's just a background. The Chair has already touched on this. The age of our generation fleet, 60% of our power stations are older than the recommended design life of 8 years. And you'll see that the grouping there under coal free, those are way beyond their life cycle. Only 3 power stations under coal 1 are still below the 30-year design life. The issues that result from this reality is that there's an increase in unplanned failures of these units. There's more mechanical maintenance failures. There's an increased duration that is required whenever you take the units out for maintenance. And this puts additional pressure on the grid. There's an increased cost in the maintenance of these old units. And they require sometimes specialist engineering skills. Now this puts an additional strain on our capacity, which is already far below the required level to meet increased demand. And this is the reality that we are facing. You see that we have already indicated that over the past 15 years we have not spent sufficient capex on these assets. And the result of that underinvestment is that even in terms of planned maintenance, we are still below the international benchmark of the standards that we need to adhere to ensure that our plants are maintained. The next slide shows the unplanned capability loss factor. This is an indication that even on a planned maintenance basis, we are far below the standards that we need to be at. The energy availability factor, which is the measure of plant availability as energy losses, is below that we have targeted. We were way above 85% in the past 10 years. We have come down to 75% availability. And without the new capacity coming in, or without addressing the critical maintenance issues to ensure the reliability of our aging fleet, we will continue to see a downward trend in the availability of energy. We have identified the primary areas of improvement within the plant. We have looked at the issues around skills and resource. We have looked at planning and scoping, as well as productivity management. We have a 5-point recovery plan that is already in place to put our generation fleet into a sustainable path. We have a strategy calling the 80-10-10. Simply put, it means we have to have a minimum of 80% of our capacity available at all times. 10% has to be allocated for planned maintenance of our fleet. And 10% has to be allocated for unplanned outages resulting from the challenges that I've indicated around our fleet. We are hoping that the adherence to this would ensure that we adhere to philosophy maintenance, among others, but that we tackle the issue of unplanned outages head on, and therefore restore the reliability of our fleet. We have to recover good practices, adhere to standard operating practices, housekeeping issues, online maintenance, visible leadership, empowerment at power plant station level, and secure space to manage increased volatility, which will be with us for some time. And the securing of time and space would require that we exploit additional demand and supply levers. That slide indicates that space that we require to secure additional demand and supply levers actually has certain implications. It means then that in the first year, we would require an additional 7,400 megawatts. That would give us the necessary space to do mid-life refurbishment of our fleet, to do the necessary maintenance to bring our fleet to a level of performance that can be reliable without impacting negatively on security of supply. It grows progressively, but in the third year, it starts showing a downward trend, which will then translate into the energy availability rising to levels above 85%. And with the unplanned outages rate coming down to the level of 6%, which is the international benchmark. The next 5 years would basically see us arresting the downward trend, stabilizing the system, and ensuring that it improves and becomes sustainable. We have had challenges around the constraints that our system has seen. Next slide. We have had to reduce load to assure the integrity of our grid. And while the intention has been to avoid the forced demand reduction, the increased possibility of load shedding has been a consequence and still remains a risk that we are going to have to live with. Over the last 6 months, we have managed the performance of our generation fleet. However, at the current reserve levels, which is about 6%, additional incidents affecting the balance of supply and demand may continue to lead to forced demand reduction. We have indicated that we are putting in place revised schedules that would, to the extent possible, give some predictability and ensure that those that are likely to be affected are prepared themselves, at least in advance, even if it's just a day in advance, to ensure that there's a change in the behavior that would then help us to do what needs to be done to ensure that we restore the credibility of the performance of our fleet. We are in the winter period, which is between May and the end of August. We still have a constrained system, specifically in the evening peak between 5 and 9 p.m., the highest demand being the peak within the peak since 5:30 to 6:30. And this is primarily because of increased usage of electrical equipment, heaters, geysers, fuel pumps, and other cooking utilities. We have heard that residential customers can indeed make the biggest difference as demand increases in the evenings, and we are talking about a joint collective effort to beat the peak. You will also see that in that graph, the winter peak is quite high. The summer profile is slightly different. We call it the double mountain crop because it's a bit flat at the top there, which means that we've got a more stable but high demand throughout the day in summer. The next slide is just an indication of what we have been saying to our customers to help us beat the peak in this winter. So these are all appliances that are not in use. And we'll continue to send this message as we go along. The next slide also indicates a similar message that we are sending to our customers to help us manage and increase the demand. Just going on to the association, the dimension of our sustainability plan. This has to do with the new generation program that we have embarked on. I will focus specifically on NIMBY, but we know that we have 3, 4, 5 projects that are underway. So that the Midupi is a tropical one, but we've got Midupi, we've got Kusile, we've got Ingula, we've got the Sere wind plant, and we've got a massive program to expand our transmission lines, specifically to ensure access to that grid by independent power producers. Something that has been happening in the background, but it's something that has enabled us to connect almost 3,000 megawatts of electricity into the grid, primarily from the renewable independent power producers. And we will continue to do this in anticipation of Window 4 and Window 5 of the REIPP. But we'll focus for now on the Middle East Unit 6. We have indicated previously that we have stress welding defects on our boilers, which resulted in us taking certain drastic action, including calling on certain bonds and guarantees from the suppliers. We have now gone past those issues. The welding issues have been rectified and they have been passed. The pressure test, the boiler pressure test, have received the necessary approval, and we are now able to continue with the program without any technical defects at all. We also had issues within our control and instrumentation side, which impacted on the safety of the plant, the boiler protection system. We have also taken the drastic measures, including termination of the contract with one of the suppliers and the appointment of a new supplier, that has seen us break the impasse. And we are able to report that we have managed to overcome those control and instrumentation challenges. And we also do not have any further technical issues on the controls and instrumentation that is on the turbine side. We have had issues around the safety on site, particularly at Ingula, with early this year losing 6 lives as a result of an incident in October 2013. And we have taken additional steps to ensure compliance by our contractors to our safety standards. But my next slide, again, maybe we have said that we are online to synchronize the first unit of NUP, which is NUP Unit 6, in December 2014. The issue around the synchronization is that the term is a little bit of a tongue as well, but the chairman has got a nice way of explaining it. He says it's coupling all the components in the power plant, and specifically the boiler with the turbine, and running the turbine so that it starts producing first fires directly onto the grid. So when we talk about synchronization, we are talking about the first power going into the grid. But obviously, as first power goes into the grid, it ramps up over time. Over a period of 6 months, it reaches its maximum output, which will be May, June, which we call commercial operational date. But first power is that synchronization in December. We are committed, Minister, to achieve that. We have taken certain steps to ensure that this is not just a leadership of ESCOM issue, that it is actually an organizational-wide commitment. We have compacted every staff member in ESCOM on the achievement of this particular milestone. And we'll do the same with Unit 5. Kubile is intended to be synchronized next year, December, this 2015. The delay has been primarily as a result of the investigation processes that we have to do. But we have indeed corrected some of the mistakes that we saw in Milpi. And I also consider that we will stick to the schedule on Kusile. The Imbula one is the one that I was saying that has been delayed as a result of the incidents there, and we are unfortunately missing our initial schedule there. Midupi in truth, just to indicate a little bit more detail on what happens is on which day we clean the boiler, we then put in the first fire through oil, and then first fire through coal. Low through further steam on the 15th December, we put the power onto the grid. Just moving on to the IPP program briefly, we have indicated that persons, we are guided by the government policy document on the integrated resource plan. And this is a document that was formulated in 2010, has been revised in November last year, which gives us an indication of the preferred generation technology that the country requires to meet the expected demand growth up to 2030. The Department of Energy has started the RAP as that it delivers on the government policy of reducing carbon emissions, introducing competition in the generation of electricity, and facilitating economic growth for the country. We have had a lot of successes in this space since the 2010 promulgation of the IRP, and I have indicated that through the IRP we have identified over 7,000 megawatts of capacity that needs to be procured from independent power producers. We have made some progress in terms of the renewable IPPs that I've indicated that we have connected. We have also identified some lessons around what best to do going forward, including aligning the timelines between ourselves and the departments, ensuring common approaches to geographical locations and integration into existing plans, as well as attending to the funding issues related to this expansion. The international agreements that we have across the border, primarily with Mozambique and through the Cabora Bassa, those provide us with sufficient power to offset some of our capacity shortfalls, particularly when we have a serious constraint on our system. We sometimes have to curtail supply to stakeholders when our own system is constrained, and those agreements have been honored by them. The issues around gas, as the chairperson has indicated, we are exploiting the potential for gas as a significant player in our energy mix. We have a short-term, medium to long-term program that we are pursuing. Short-term being the potential for 600 megawatts of power generated in Mozambique, inclusive of liquefied natural gas. And on a medium-term, potential for an additional 5,000 megawatts through the Rovuma gas field, as well as in Western Cape, the Ipubezi gas field there, and the strengthening or conversion of our Anderlecht and Horika OCGTs. And further down the line, on a longer term, we are looking at shale gas as well as CBM reserves in the water bank in Mpumalanga. Just looking at an issue that has also had a negative impact on our finances will be the issues around the municipal debt, which so look at it very quickly.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, as indicated, revenue collection is quite crucial to Eskom's liquidity challenges. Recently, we have seen quite a significant increase in our municipal debt, and you clearly see on the graph on the presentation that the municipality debt has been spiraling. If you look at September 2013, you will notice that we had debt sitting at about just under 1.5 billion, and it increased quite significantly in October 2013. And as we see right now, it's sitting at 2.9 billion rand. On the next slide, you will notice that we have particular challenges in specific provinces. In the Free State, as you can see, that it has been increasing exponentially since January as well. You'll also notice in Limpopo as well as in the Northwest, but Gauteng also starting to be a challenge. We have been working quite closely with the provinces with the assistance of government, in particular the National Treasury, as well as our Department of Public Enterprises. We have had several engagements with the specific provincial governments where the premiers have actually requested the MECs of Quarter and Finance to actually lead to be able to assist us to address the situation. We do need to indicate that we, from our perspective as Eskom, given our financial challenges, we have no option but to be more assertive in protecting Eskom's revenue risk going forward. And we have actually provided this connection notices. However, we're working with our key stakeholders, and we do want to indicate that disconnecting the municipalities is really not a solution we would like to get to. It is the last resort, and it is actually instituted when we have exhausted all our needs and unable to find a solution. But we will continue to work with a stakeholder to make sure that we arrest the situation as soon as possible. If you go into the next slide, we actually indicate some of the underlying root causes that we have seen in the mini debt situation. And we do need to emphasize that this is not an Eskom view. It is really through various engagements that we've had with specific municipalities on some of the challenges that they have. And as you can see, it really ranges from inadequate skills within in terms of financial management skills and engineering in terms of metering infrastructure, particularly resources, municipal green systems not adequate, and also municipalities not being able to manage their cash flow in terms of collecting the revenue from their direct customers to be able to repay. Traditionally, municipalities also do rely on the equitable grant that they receive from the National Treasury. We have seen, however, that has been declining, and therefore most of them are not able to ring-fence the electricity debt out of that grant that they receive and therefore be able to repay us. And really, those are some of the issues. They obviously have to deal with their tariff and structuring and modeling, which Eskom has undertaken to assist them in terms of their, from a capacity perspective, how to do the tariff structuring and modeling for their own customers. So essentially, in summary, those are some of the underlying issues that we are seeing, and we are working with them to be able to resolve the situation as soon as possible.
That's basically our presentation, and we are ready to take questions and to clarify any other matter.
Thank you very much, honourable members and our ministers and colleagues in this room. That is the end of the presentation from our colleagues from Eskom, and we have had, I think this has been a frank and honest presentation I've ever seen in my life, talking about issues of credit rating, which is threatening our national energy, also issues of aging plants, issues of financial sustainability,
really, I think they've put everything on our table. Now I will allow members to pose questions. That is taking questions, comments, not only from members but from everybody who's here to make a contribution, because I've seen we have other people, the professors from University of Cape Town who are here to also make their own comments. I will start with honorable members first, because this is our meeting from the two study groups, from the two portfolio committees. My apologies. I will start with honorable members on my left, and Mamshala. She will be followed by honorable member next to him, Dr. Lenge. And then I'll go on my right again at the back. Honorable member, you'll excuse me, I've not yet grabbed all the names. I'm told it's honorable Freyden. And then she'll be followed by honorable member just opposite me. The name again. Okay, and my friend Natasha at the back, and then honorable Marie, and then she'll be followed by honorable member Falku. In that order.
Thank you, honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me thank ECOM for an informative and frank presentation. We welcome your presentation. My first question, Chair, is I was noting during the presentation, you partly covered it. My questions are around the financial sustainability of ESCOM. I wanted to share this to where the any financial implications after the MIP decree. Hence, I'm saying Flo partly covered in her presentation that particular question. In the event that a transmission business is separated from ESCOM, what are the possible implications to their financial sustainability? And in light of the challenges at Mutuhi, are they still confident that we will meet the deadline by December in terms of synchronization and the implications thereof around the issue of it downgrading? And what are the possible interventions that the shareholder can consider in terms of assisting ESCOM? And the implications or the impact around the municipal debts, what impact does it have in terms of your financial sustainability? Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Dr. Tin. Let me first appreciate the elaborate presentation that we have received, which has enlightened us about the challenges and therefore the remedial strategies at the disposal of ESCOM. My question is with regard to the cost of the IEPPs compared to ESCOM generation cost. How do you then anticipate a payment for these? And how long are contracts, and what is the impact that on ESCOM? Secondly, Chairperson, let me take this advantage that the Honourable Minister for Energy and Public Enterprises are here to, as a public representative of the poor from the rural Eastern Cape, the least electrified area in the province of 169 population, of which only 22% is accessible to electricity, meaning that 78% is still in the dark. I therefore urge the ministers to consider this, and also having been alleged here is that given the challenges, that there is no crisis at ESCOM. That is why I am passing this to the ministry to say it must be considered, because ESCOM still has capacity to expand if the stakeholders actually are prepared to come on board. Thank you.
Honourable Stalin.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just say on a light note, your opening statement around the good weather in Cape Town being a good omen for us dealing with this crisis. If we're going to rely on Cape Town weather to solve this crisis, I think we're in a very bumpy ride. But let me just speak to some of the issues, because some of the previous speakers have said this is a very comprehensive presentation. I disagree to a certain extent, and I think it would have been helpful if Nancy had also been here, because I'm also interested to hear an independent assessment of the performance of ESCOM. But there is a certain narrative that ESCOM is wanting to push, which is essentially to say that the crisis that they face in the funding crisis is largely around the fact that they never got the kind of tariff increases that they wanted from NERSA. Now, we can go into some of the details and the issues, the very complex financial issues around return on equity and how you work out depreciation, but that has already been covered in the NERSA submissions, and we did make submissions on that. But the fundamental reality is that we need to look at why are we in this particular crisis now, and this is what ESCOM needs to speak to, and these are my questions to you in terms of that, is that the fundamental reason is obviously the delay in the duty. We know that, and we know problems here, so I'm not going to belabor that point. The other problem, though, is the issue of unplanned outages, and I haven't seen any documentation that's been presented here on the scale of the unplanned outages that have in fact taken place this year. As far as I know, in fact, we've had more unplanned outages than planned outages. And certainly what I have seen is that a lot of those unplanned outages, in fact, occur after you go in and do maintenance on a power station. So what are the reasons behind it? Is that because we don't have the requisite skills to, in fact, do the proper maintenance so that these power stations can, in fact, be performing the way that they should be? So can you please speak to that and give us details on how much unplanned outages have, in fact, taken place? As a result of that, we've had to rely extensively on diesel generation. And so how much has, in fact, been spent on diesel generation over this period? And to what extent is that pushing up the cost of ESCOM? That is another issue that needs to be tackled. Then also the issue of the coal contracts, because I think that ESCOM has moved from a situation where you used to have long-term coal contracts for your power stations, in which you obviously got the price of that coal for a lot cheaper, and you've moved to a situation of shorter-term contracts. What has the impact been on that, and can we just tease out that issue a bit, because we need to look at that going forward as to the financial health of that. And then obviously the issue around municipalities as well and the debt, I mean, that has to be tackled. But what all of that tells me is that as the Minister of Public Enterprises in fact challenged me in her budget vote, is that what we really need is an end-state vision for this electricity sector. And I think that having all of us together here today, hopefully this is a good omen for how we're going to move forward on these issues. Because I don't think solving this electricity crisis comes down to ESCOM alone. Clearly, ESCOM can't do that job anymore in that totality. We need to look at how we reform this electricity sector, including the municipal distribution, and we need to look at how, in fact, we're going to move towards that. And that means ESCOM playing a decreasing role in terms of our electricity sector and reliance on other actors, in fact, come in and make up for that. So let's also have a bit of a discussion around that. And let's spend the next 5 years, in fact, defining that end-state vision and moving towards it. That is something we need to do with tremendous amounts of haste. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Honourable Madam.
Chairperson, I'm so used to you calling me Natasha.
I had a thought.
My apologies. No, Chairperson, you are most welcome to call me Natasha. Chairperson, couple of things. What I really liked about both Minister Brown and both Minister Joy Peterson's debate when we discussed the budget was the emphasis on inclusivity, on portfolio cases working together, regarding not politicizing issues that affect all South Africans, and I found that most heartening and was most welcomed. Chairman, I was slightly concerned yesterday when I saw ESCOM officials around the parliamentary campus who were here apparently to brief the ANC study group on issues pertaining to both energy and ESCOM as a whole. And I couldn't help going back to my office and feeling rather left out. thinking, well, if we are a committee that sits together and works together for a common good, why were the DA and, quite frankly, other parties that belong to these portfolio committees not included in these discussions? So I wonder if I could just have some clarity there, because maybe I have completely misunderstood the situation. But I think in issues, in instances like this, I think it would be most welcomed and most necessary for all of us to sit together and not have one party receive these important briefings while leaving especially the official opposition out of these briefings. Can I also then, now that we have ESCOM top brass here and we have the ministers here, I'm wondering if we can have some clarity regarding the contract at the Medici Power Station. As you know, I submitted a PIE application last year, and certain of the contracts ESCOM's information officers were willing to give to me. Others clearly were not that forthcoming. And the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprises actually took a decision, which is ministered and it's in their report, that oversight can only be properly executed against ESCOM if we as a committee know what's in those contracts, and especially, more importantly, what the penalty clauses are against contractors and subcontractors that force continual pushback of dates of completion of the duty. So I'd like to know where we sit with regards to those contracts. Chairman, also actors in the municipalities. One of the things that I found we as the DA received the most complaints about was the lack of communication between ESCOM and the general public regarding when these rolling blackouts were going to occur. And I myself went on the ESCOM website, and I must tell you that it is seriously lacking when it comes to giving any kind of solid information. If you put in my suburb, for example, it said you can expect a power outage between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Now that's 12 hours. How do you prepare yourself in a day for an outage like that? You don't know when, you don't know how. So I think, and I've said this before, and I've said this specifically to ESCOM once before, ESCOM has Twitter accounts, they have Facebook accounts. These things must be used to inform the general public, because one of the biggest concerns that people have is that they don't know when the lights are going to go out. So I think communication is absolutely essential. And then, Chair, specifically to my minister, to Minister Lynn Brown, I was wondering, what kind of progress are you making yourself with regards to discussing, perhaps with Minister Pravin Gordhan, as to how you can come to some kind of settlement arrangement with these municipalities who, some of them, we saw some of the provinces are skyrocketing. I saw Free State and Mpumalanga being worst with regards to payback deals, because obviously municipalities will not be able to pay the full whack back straight away. But as long as we've got payment deals, we know that the debt isn't just going to escalate and these municipalities find themselves in a situation of no return. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Murray.
Thank you, Chairperson. I first want to start with the first one, if we can have an update, what is the current status of the coal-fired power station Duva in Witbank. Number two, we have the line that says, what is the appropriate rate of return? Can I ask the feedback, what should it be on Billiton's aluminium smelters? Third, I want to re-emphasize the total municipal outstanding debt. This has a severe impact on the cash flow of ESCOM. And I really ask the two ministers to engage with the Minister of Cooperative Economy and Traditional Affairs on this issue. And it's spiraling upwards, and it's in the order of Free State, Mpumalanga, North West, and Gauteng also coming online. I'm glad to see Western Cape is paying their debt. And then I want to, it's possible to provide the standing committee with a list of all new independent power producers and what are their contracted contributions to the power grid. And the last one, as you know, there are contracts between mining companies to reduce coal to ESCOM. And on the other hand, there could be maybe, Minister, a conflict of interest here with Transnet, that certain companies do export via the Richards Bay line. And could there be a problem in a sense between these two issues? I want to comment on that. Thank you, Minister.
Honourable Staku.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I understand that load shedding has a devastating impact on industries and economy. We understand that most peak demand morning and evenings in winter are from residential customers. The dairy economy is much more important than meeting 1 hour of supply at peak time. So my question is, why don't we have a predictable load curtailment in these hours for residential customers instead of turning expensive plants like the diesel plants? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We will now allow Eskom to respond before we go to the next. Oh, my apology, I didn't put you on my list. It's honorable. Yes, Mr. Hazen. Oh, I skipped you. He was supposed to have come before honorable Michael. My apology. We'll come to the next round, honorable members. Thank you.
My carry on. Thank you, Chair. And I was the one who had my hand up first.
That's why I said my apologies.
Thank you, Chair. I thank Ekom for the presentation. I must also agree with the Honourable Freeland that I don't think everything is kosher with Ekom. Ekom only reached 57% of the target as they actually mentioned or in the promise of the contract with the government, and this was mentioned that I've read very recently by the Honourable Minister Brown. As I say, it's also Ekom only, the power that it can generate, only 60% of that creates as revenue, which is a very scary figure. And this is not only through local governments that we mentioned here, although mostly, but this is also a lot of other underlying factors. The lady from Eskom right in front of me speaks about a financial statement. Eskom is standing, and she mentioned that Eskom is relying very heavily on borrowing. And Eskom at this stage owes 254.8 billion rand. And the Moody's and the Fitch's and the credit rating people, with the rating that we were just given, this would have the increase in financing would be up by another 40% on that giving us. And this is really scary. Scary for the country and for everyone. Someone mentioned, and I think that was also Honorable Hyland mentioned, what does diesel cost us? One of the Eskom presentators spoke about open gas turbines that we only use in emergency. There were 14 of them built here in the Western Cape, and they said that they would never use more than one at a time for emergencies. All 14 are being used. All 14 of them are being used. And this is costing us 10.56 thousand million rand in diesel. That answers your question. That's what I was. 10.57 million rand in diesel. That's an astronomical figure in diesel. NERSA are only allowed, and I would also have allowed, I'd like to have NERSA here, only allowed for a diesel tariff usage of 2 billion rand. This is what Eskom is already paying now. The total cost of power generated escalated with 14.9% or 69.8 billion rand. This is what all this cost escalated to. I've made some notes now. I can see what I haven't done. And also, Kusili and Medupi, I also don't think that they, I think it was Nathan there, would they read their talk? And I don't think so. With the strikes that they have, it seems that labor unions are now able to dictate policy and development to the country as well. I also don't think that I would read that by the end of the summer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's allow Eskom to answer to those questions, and we will go to the next round where we'll take comments or, yes, comments or few, or some few questions. And honorable minister, you want to suggest something?
Thank you very much to the presidents of both committees and minister and deputy minister. Mine is not to answer on behalf of Eskom, but just to let you know that Mercy would be quite prepared to do a presentation to the joint committees if you are requested to do so. Obviously, Mr. Aaron comes to pay grace, but if you would like such a meeting, we're quite willing to do such a presentation to you. Thank you.
Are you here? Nersa? No? Oh, okay.
I don't think that we're going to ask you to do a presentation today.
No,
they are not on our program anyway. Before we allow everyone to reply that we can now engage in discussions, I just want to answer Honorable Michael on the study group issue. I think political parties were allowed to invite anybody to the study group if they wish so. So there's no formalities around that. We felt at the African National Congress because we are all new and we wanted to understand what is it about so that we don't get lost in today's meeting. This is why the reason why you saw them around. We invited them. DA can also invite them. The freedom fighters can also, what is it? Six photo fighters? Whatever. They can also invite them to the study group. Thank you.
Sorry, sir.
Let's allow ESCOM to reply.
Sorry, sir.
Yes, Honourable Member?
Thanks, sir. I think it's important. I understand that maybe you might be struggling to pronounce other parties' names properly. It's Economic Freedom Fighters.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. ESCOM, can you repeat?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll give you some of the questions and the Suru from the finance side will deal with some of the questions. The Chairperson is also going to make some comments. I'm going to deal with the issue around Medupi. The questions around the industrial action and the impact on the schedule. We have said that we would like that it is a risk. Any industrial action on our side poses a risk. But we think that we have put sufficient mitigating plans in place to offset that particular risk. And indeed, we are relieved that there has been a settlement on the waste disputes that impact on the steels and engineering sector. A settlement that was reached yesterday, paving the way for us to move with speed to recover those lost states as a result of the industrial action. So we hope that we have passed the risk of industrial action in Medupi with the settlement that has been reached. The issue around Medupi contracts, there has been a request, there has been an order that we need to provide this contract. We have agreed that we will do so. The difficulty is with the contractors that are party to this contract. We are still grappling with a common definition of what is confidential information that they would not want released to the public. And we are hoping to reach some form of a common agreement to the contractors quite so that we are able to release those contracts to members that have requested that. We are bound by the law, the information, the legal space to actually make those available, and we remain committed to doing that. There are issues around the delays in Medupi as well, and we have said that we do not think that the delays in Medupi are going to be with us forever. We have acknowledged that there were serious challenges in the construction of that plant. These were challenges that none of us could have foreseen. There were challenges both resulting from ESCOM management of the project as well as the contractors who were implementing the project. And we have dealt with both aspects of the challenge that resulted in those delays. And we have indicated that we do not see any further technical issues that would result in further delays. Issues around the scale of unplanned outages. I have indicated that we have recognized that at some stage we had lost some capacity within ESCOM, and we are in the process of rebuilding that capacity. It's a challenge, but it's something that we have recognized and we are doing something about it. We also think that there were other weaknesses within the way in which we were doing planning for maintenance and how the work cycles were being met. And this has to do also with some of the contractors that we contract to do maintenance on our behalf. We have even taken the certain measures through the initiative of the chair, where we called all the contractors to basically indicate that we are expecting an improvement in their performance at the pain of termination of their contracts. These are the measures that we are taking, including measures that penalizes the late return of units that have been out on maintenance, because the economic cost of one day of a unit that was supposed to return and that returns a day later is huge. So we are working on ensuring that we review the contracts, we increase the penalties, because we believe that most contractors will begin to change their behavior if they feel the pain in their pockets. So we are attending to the issues around the work cycle and the liability of units that have come back from planned outages. The unplanned outages have at some stage ran at about 17%. And that we do have specific information that indicates how the graph goes, which is an indication of the seriousness with which we have to deal with the issue of unplanned outages running away. The generation recovery plan specifically targets unplanned outages. It is very focused on arresting the downward trend of outages that are unplanned. And therefore, it requires space and time so that those units that require midlife refurbishment can be taken out and given sufficient time. If it takes 20 days to deal with a refurbishment of a unit or a component, we have to make provision for that. We've already done a condition assessment of all our power stations. We know exactly what unit needs to go out when and for how long. We now need to close the gap that will be created by taking out those units on that maintenance plan. And that's why we say that we are going to require close to just over 7,000 megawatts to give up that necessary space and time to deal with the issues. The coal contracts, we still have the long-term coal contracts. And those long-term coal contracts have not been terminated. We have simply ensure that even the short-term coal contracts that are available to help us meet the certain short-term requirements, we are able to take those. But they have not had any negative impact on our coal costs. What we have seen, though, is issues around coal quality, which is also part of the plan to improve the performance of our generation plant. We are addressing coal quality issues, including coal quality issues arising out of our long-term coal supply agreements. So the quality issues are not only relating to short-term coal contracts. We have issues with our PSAs, the long-term coal supply agreements on coal contracts. We have indicated that the issues around the municipality outages. Sometimes outages that take place at municipal level or at consumer level are associated with load shedding, which is not necessarily always the case. In fact, in most cases, it is not the case of load shedding. But it is localized outages that result from cable theft and electricity theft. We know that the table theft has been criminalized, and we call on our committees to help us apprehend those that are involved in this criminal activity. We are hoping that the penalties for this type of crime should be increased, and we are engaging with the Ministry of Justice to ensure that there's an increase in that crime. We've also said that we need to criminalize electricity theft, because electricity theft, or what we sometimes call illegal connections, actually puts a strain on our network. And that strain, because it is not provided for in terms of the lines that we have put to carry a particular load, means then that it trips our system. And this results in the outages at community level. Now, also, this is an act of criminality that needs to be defined as such. And we are hoping that through discussions that the portfolio committees will help us in getting that criminalized. But we need to ensure that we make a call to our consumers that they should not allow other parties access to their own distribution system, because it means then that there's collusion. If two parties agree that you can connect legally on my system and I will provide you with additional power, the two people who are colluding committed a crime. And that crime results in sufferings of a whole host of other people, which we need to deal with. And we are working with municipalities to begin to educate our people about the issues and the impact of that type of thing. We have also indicated that with Duba, the incident that happened in Duba, and there was a question about what is the status of that. Duba Unit 3 is still out. We are still in the process of investigation with the Department of Labor, and we are hoping that before the end of this year we'll have some preliminary results out of that investigation to indicate what was the cause of the incident that happened in Duba. Predictable load reduction shows. We have indicated that we have engaged with the regulator to amend or to allow us to amend the way we schedule load shedding or load reduction. Part of that application to NERSA was to ensure that we give as much predictability to consumers as possible. It is not going to be possible to give on the minute predictability or predictability a month or a week in advance. But at the very least, we hope to be able to give some projections in a week and in a day. And if there's a change in the system on that particular day when we predicted that we will only require X percentage of load, and there's a change that requires more, we'll communicate that. We will explore additional methods of communication, and we welcome the proposals around using all sorts of media, including social media, to communicate with residents that may be affected. We are trying to ensure that we limit the impact, the economic impact of load shedding. And if we are able to plan and to ensure that people do change their behavior in terms of how they treat electricity, we will be able to limit those negative impacts on the economy as a whole. So let's go into the issues relating to the financial implications of a whole host of other things that have been asked, and the chairman will also make some comments on some of the issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can start with the same question around the financial implications of the NYCD 3 determination. Chairperson, we applied for a 15% increase. 16% increase, of which 13% was for Eskom's own use and the 3% was for the IDPs. We received an 8% increase, of which 2% was for the IDPs. The translation into revenue was 1.069 billion application versus 864 billion rand that we received. That is a difference of 225 billion, and from our perspective, that was the shortfall that we saw. And those are the financial implications that we are talking about in terms of
continuing with our BRI program, the capital expansion program, continuing with ensuring that we ensure security of supply for the country and our liquidity challenges. In addition to that shortfall, as I indicated, is that our sales volumes have also declined since we applied for the MYPD3. We estimate a 47 billion rand shortfall over the 5-year period of the MYPD, and I did indicate that we've already seen it in the first year of MYPD when we closed the books, that we lost 5.8 billion rand as a result of that. And there are various reasons for that in terms of the mining industry, the protected strike in the platinum sector, the gold mining persisting economic downturn, and a significant decline in our international sales as well. And really those are the assumptions that we made versus what we are seeing as our revenue in actual mode. In terms of the Munich debt financial impact as well, as we indicated that we do need to collect the revenue. If we don't collect it, it does have an impact on our relative impact on our cash flows and liquidity. So a 2.9 billion rand debt, of which close to 80% is over 30 years old, means that we're not collecting the revenue and therefore the cash flow that we expect to receive on a monthly basis, we are losing that, and that is the financial implication. On the issue of what the implication would be if we separated transmission from Eskom, and I believe particularly relates to the ISMO, we do still need to do detailed work around that. However, just to indicate that we obviously had a borrowing program. That borrowing program is linked to governance with the investors. They do expect to receive certain revenues into Eskom so that they can be assured of our ability to be able to repay our debt as it falls through. That in itself means that when we move to the ISMO, we need to think about the implications of certain customers coming out of Eskom and what does that mean in terms of reduced revenue and how do we then make sure we continue to repay the debt, as we say, that we see of 250 billion rand on our balance sheet. And eventually I can summarize that to be the indication. But as I say, more work needs to be done from our perspective in terms of the quantum of those once we have the full detail of the ISMO going forward. On the LPP cost compared to the generation cost, I think we have seen, particularly with the renewable energy LPP cost, coming in initially big money at significantly higher tariffs, but we do know that it has actually reduced since then. But on average, we're seeing a number. It started at around just over 2.12 cents per kilowatt hour, and I think it ranges now between 1.40 and 88 cents per kilowatt hour. When compared to the generation or the Eskom cost, I can indicate, and it's in our financial, that our total electricity cost is actually at 59 cents per kilowatt hour. So it is significantly lower. Eskom's costs are significantly lower than what the IDP costs are, which we obviously have together. While I'm still on that issue, I think, yes, we will provide the list of the IPPs. We don't have them with us at currently, but we can make them available. But the contracts are quite long in terms of term. They are around 20-year contracts. And yes, they obviously Eskom is the off-taker in terms of buying the energy from the IPP currently. It is a pass-through from the regulator. I think the chief executive has indicated that in the presentation. However, we're saying that there is a timing issue in terms of the cash flow because we buy the energy currently, but we can only apply later for the pass-through from the regulator. So it is a cash flow issue, and that's the impact that we are talking about. I think, Chairperson, the issue of the Eskom's cost, yes, I think and I'm sure our chairman will give background into alignment on Eskom's mandate going forward. But yes, the total cost were 10.5 billion and it is available on our integrated report that will be coming back to present comprehensively. We only had in the application or determination of the regulator 3.5 billion. But it's really about, keeping the lights on. At what point do we stop to actually spend this money? It has serious implications, as we said, for the country. And as we indicated, we do look at other cheaper alternatives other than the open-cycle gas turbines to be able to displace the cost
we've looked at the short-term IPPs that we have contacted through Kendall and Royal, and as well as some of the gas that are available in Mozambique. We are cheaper, but obviously they are not as cheap as the current generation cost that we have in, internally.
Excuse me, Tulu, on that specific one, on the diesel issues, are you able to elaborate, because honorable members ask, most of them are on now, and initially you had a limited number of them, so that we are clarified.
Yes, and it's really around how much we need to use them. They are really meant for picking, meaning that we only need to use them really during peak times. And when we did put our application, is that we assumed specific load factors, meaning that we only use it for a certain amount of time throughout the year. And what we have seen is that what we are using them for versus what we are applied for, because we have been keeping the lights on, is quite significant. So essentially, we had anticipated a load factor of 5%, as an example, 5%. But it increased exponentially, was 17%. And what that essentially means is how much do we use them for on a daily basis and per hour over the 12-month period. Essentially, that's what it is. So we find ourselves using them particularly in winter, quite heavily during peak times. But when summer comes as well, you will find that because the profile in summer is flattened, there was a slide that was indicated by the chief executives, we then have to use them more to continue to keep the lights on. And I'm sure the chairman can elaborate on that as well.
I think it's well covered, Chairperson. But I just want to put to the comment by Honourable Michael regarding the communication or lack thereof between ourselves and our customers. I think we take the point you're making. I think it's a very useful contribution, and we appreciate it. I'd like, Chairperson, just as a general matter of comment on the issue of communication. Our own Minister Brown, has herself criticized ESCOM for its lack of ability to communicate with the stakeholders. This is a historical problem that the company has had. The mindset that has lived with for a long time, and we, the board, have certainly made the point that proactive communication by ESCOM with its stakeholders, particularly the public, is very key to the way that we need to be understood by our stakeholders and what it is that we're really doing regarding such an important asset to the public. So the issue of communication is indeed very much in our minds, uppermost in our minds, in terms of making sure that our stakeholders get an understanding of what this business is doing and what it's about and what problems we're experiencing. I just thought I'd make that comment. Thank you.
If I could just make one point, there was an issue around the BHP bleaching contract as it relates to our return on assets. I do want to state that we actually do not attach specific assets to a specific customer, but we will try and see perhaps the Honourable Judge Murray can assist us, and I'll just take it offline with him. But yes, we do know that the contract that we have currently, it's not at the mega flat tariffs, and it's really with the regulator at this point in time to resolve, and it's the only contract that we have currently that we need to resolve.
The other matter relating to the debt service by municipalities, the arrangements between COPCA and DDE, I would happily leave that to Honourable Minister to deal with her colleague.
Thank you very much, ESCOM. We'll come to the second and the last round, and I hope from the answers we got from the ESCOM colleagues, honorable members are able to have a picture that when we go to do our oversight, which areas should we look into? Because we need to exercise our role as the structure of parliament so that we make them accountable. Honorable Minister, you want to say something before we go to the next?
To answer some of the questions that were posed to me directly, the issue of the municipalities, we have had an initial engagement with Minister Gordon already, And so he's asked for about a month in which to work out, because, you know, some of the municipalities are actually not sustainable financially. And so that exacerbates the problem. So we'll in time, we can report that to the portfolio committee. The issue of communication, I think that's part of the bigger problem. And so we must get it right. We must get a plan so that we are able to talk to everyone. The funding crisis that's been raised by the members, one of the things I think we must do is to come back when NAFSA comes to have a conversation, because it's part of what members are saying here, that collectively we need to have a conversation that deals with the end state, that deals with the IRP, that deals with funding towards it. And so I think that's an issue that we should come back to. I think that the Honourable Maria has just been trying to be opportunistic about Richard Bay. But I agree that all harbours must, including the ones in the West Cape, must be optimally used. I'm not using the star today.
Thank you very much, Honourable Monica. Can we go to a last round of questions? Honourable members and comments, not only questions, because our responsibility is to oversight and hold them accountable. That does not mean we don't advise and give them our input. Remember that. Honourable member, Shelly, I'm sorry, I'll call you by your first name, Shelly. And Honourable Member Rando will follow her. And we'll also go to... Where's my list? Post Haven. Earth Haven. My apology, Earth Haven. And we'll go to Honourable Micah. This time I got it right, not Natasha. We'll go to Honourable Member Honourable Member Marubela. I need to call you by your name, my approach. And he will be followed by Honourable Mari, and the last one will be Honourable Haile. In that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. On a very light note, on the issue of communication, this morning I received an SMS that gave ESCOM reference planned maintenance on the 7th of August from 10 o'clock to 16 on pole number. Apology for any inconveniences. So this is for my house. They're just informing me that I would not have electricity on the 7th of August, which is quite good. Yes, I'm the fortunate one, but I mean it shows that somewhere they are getting it right. The communication is there. The question which I have is around the cost reflective tariff, which ESCOM says needs to introduce and it needs to that is part of part of the three methods of you collecting your revenues and making yourself sustainable financially. And having cost reflective tariffs is but one part which you have committed yourself from your credit grantor, who said part of us giving you this money, you must have cost reflective tariffs. Now, the problem is that this cost reflective tariff means that the pockets of the consumers needs to dig deeper. It means you'll be charging tariffs that are much more than what you're charging currently. And looking at the situation in the country, which our consumers are still struggling at the moment, they don't have much, or they're left with very minimal to even save. I want to understand, how does ESCOM think, or what is the plan to introduce this court reflective tariffs, or if, let's say, for example, the NERSA grants you the opportunity or permission to charge these tariffs, would you then, do you have a plan to say you will introduce it little by little, or what is the plan exactly? Because I see a situation where we will be, the very same consumers will be burdened, the very same small businesses will say they don't have much to take home after the tariffs have increased so much. But if, let's say, you have a plan, clear plan, let's say, such you, maybe you categorize the consumers accordingly to say this will be what will be charged as cost reflective to this industry, to this and to this, and the end will be to the suffering or the least fortunate consumers who don't have much to take home. Since you know that the situation in the country says that the Gini coefficient or those that are taking home money, they don't have much to spend at the end of the day. That's the only question I have.
Thanks, Jefferson. Anyway, our names are Zugifa. The one is Zugifa and the one is okay. Jefferson, I just want to thank the minister on giving us the assurance that the Minister of Culture is taking care of the debt of the municipality, because I was worried if Eskom is just going to open it to the municipalities and the MECs or the MECs on and premiers on in the provinces. So how long is Eskom going to do that? I think if it is within the hands of the Minister of Culture, it is in the right direction. My question is, with Eskom, to compare for us the synchronization compared to the commercial operation of metal. Because we might think that the synchronization, when it starts on the 1st of December, it means it will go down up to the communities and everything, but how do we compare the two? And also, Eskom is rated at a negative credit watch by the rating agencies until the end of September. We are tapped in to help or to give guidance to help Eskom in the downgrading situation or the downgrading the downgrading by the rating agencies. But going forward, how do we prevent this not to happen again? Or because what can be done to prevent a further credit downgrading by the rating agencies?
Thanks,
Chairperson. Next, Honourable Member.
Very easy to pronounce my name. It's not like Economic Freedom Fight or something. This is the Mikata Freedom Party. Thank you, Chair. Just as the financial presentation was more about kilowatt hours, the President mentioned in the State of the Nation address about nuclear. Nuclear power stations, the building cost of nuclear obviously is much higher, much, much higher than coal. I think 58,000 per kilowatt hour to 26 in coal. And the generating cost is something like 96 cents to nuclear to 58 cents in coal. But then again, the clean energy and the clean energy that we all sought after in nuclear will be much cheaper on the longer run, so maybe that's an option. We need, I think we said that we need something like 7,000 megawatts at a time to make Eskom independent. Was it Blue Helium and Mazubi, 4,800, that 9,600 kilowatt hour that we were getting from there. But that, again, is... it's not clean air that we're burning there. It is not a thing of a local government, the fatalities. The illegal connections have become such a problem now that it's actually creating jobs. People are being paid to install. The speaker here said that there is built-in safety into the Eskom system. And obviously we all understand that the longer or the wires is only so much for the isolator or the circuit breaker. But they changed the circuit breakers now, and that is what's causing the fires and dangerously in the hospitals and all over in informal settlements. And the longer run, and they don't get, because of the long length of the cable that they supply, there's obviously a voltage drop and whatever, kettles front and overheat. And that is a problem, not only to Eskom, but to the local government. And it's becoming some local or some metros or municipalities actually admit that it's become uncontrollable. They can't just control it anymore. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. The next Honourable Member.
No. Thank you, Chairperson. It was Honourable Michael next. Chairperson, just a comment. I'm very happy to hear the contract will be forthcoming. Just a point that it's now August 2014 and I made my prior application in August 2013. So it's a year down the line. So these contracts might now come to finalisation as a matter of haste, because it's not fair to me, it's not fair to the South African public, and it's not fair to the Portfolio Committee that we are being made to wait for this extended period of time. And then, Chairperson, thank you very much for explaining why ESCOM was here and that they were part of your study group. I'm also very happy to hear that the Democratic Alliance is also welcome to invite ESCOM. However, I do realise that when ESCOM comes down as a group, it's a great cost, because there's obviously hotel accommodation, etc. So, Chair, I wonder if in future you and I could perhaps liaise with each other, and if ESCOM is coming down to the presentation to your study group, I will make sure that the DA invites them on the same day so that we save the South African taxpayer money and make sure that they, in one place, at one time together. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that suggestion. Next member.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Also from the Economic Freedom Fighter. Thank you. Chair, maybe is the invitation that was issued out to ESCOM, because I think the presentation was more technical dealing with the primary mandate of a provision of electricity and all that. But I'm interested to understand two things. With regard to the issue of the capacity, I thought that the presentation will have actually helped us have an understanding, because I know way in, way out, ESCOM issue out batteries for young people or those who are willing to go to school and be much more skilled in terms of required skills with regard to electricity and all of that, and then come back and go back to what the good that will have happened from the side of ESCOM. I will have said that maybe they will have taken us through to deal with some of the challenges, because some of the challenges are basically about capacity, which they've been saying, more mechanical problems that they're experiencing and all of that. As a result, you need engineers and all of that to help you to deal with such problems that they're family related to. The second question, I would just want to understand from the side of ESCOM whether they are complying with the provision of the Military Veterans Act of 2011. With regard to the capacity of the veterans, with regard to employment, business opportunities and all of that, whether they are content, because it's one of the state-owned companies that must ensure at all material terms. Development of the people of South Africa, it does it, because doing so, it will actually discourage those that are calling for the privatization of ESCOM. I think the state-owned companies can play a very important role in the developmental agenda of our own people. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Murata.
Do we still have member to recall? Honorable Murray.
Thank you, Chairperson. This question I want to put forward may be sticky or uncomfortable, for some people, but since everybody is here and it is transparent, I would like to know, what is the remuneration of a board member of ESCOM as well as a chairperson when attending a meeting? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now...
Thank you, Chair. I won't let you forget about me. I have a couple of issues that I need to kind of tease out, and it's particularly if the ministers have left, but I understand they obviously have other time constraints in that. Because I think a lot of these issues can't necessarily just be answered by ESCOM, but in fact have to be answered by both the Energy Department and the Public Enterprise Department as to how we go forward. And one of the further narratives, in fact, which ESCOM has now presented, and which has been presented in the past, is that part of the reason for the high tariff increases has been the Renewable Energy IPP program. And you presented various prices that have come through, but you haven't made a fair comparison. Yes, the blended price of ESCOM at the moment is 60 cents, but the bulk of that is made up of old coal-fired plants, where the capital has been amortized and so therefore is producing around about 10 cents a kilowatt hour. So the real kind of comparison that needs to be made is between new generation and how much that costs in terms of kilowatt hours. And in terms of what Nancy told me this was about a year and a half ago was that Medupi will probably come on stream at about 97 cents a kilowatt hour. Given the delays there, it will probably come on even higher. I'm sure Eskom will probably dispute that. But the point is that new generation coming in from Eskom at the moment is at a significantly higher rate than the blended price. And if you in fact look at the REIPP program, the prices have come down to such an extent that in fact wind is coming in some cases even at about 70 cents a kilowatt hour, which is simply cheaper than new coal-fired power stations. So my main message in this is to say that what we have seen from competitive bidding process of the REIPP program is in fact the private sector seems to be able to deliver power at a far cheaper rate than in fact ESCOM can build. And what that speaks to me is that also that any delay that they might experience has to be borne by them. The risk is borne by the private sector, not in fact by the consumer, which is the kind of stance that ESCOM is taking now, saying that our delays need to be funded by the consumer in terms of increased tariff prices. In fact, the private sector absorbs that. So my ultimate point around this is to say that in fact we should be utilizing far more of the private sector to be able to supply some of that pent-up energy demand that is there. And one of the issues is, for instance, where is the co-generation procurement program? There's about 3,500 megawatts to 5,000 megawatts in projects which can be brought online within 2 years. And I've heard that co-generation sector plead to the committee for about 2 years to say, where is the procurement process? And there has been none that's been initiated by the department. So I hope that that will finally happen. There is huge potential out there. We just not make it easy for people to, in fact, supply energy to this grid, and we just rely all on ESCOM, and those inefficiencies are then pushing up the prices. So that has to be dealt with. But my last point on this is around grid planning as well. Because in the presentation, you say despite ESCOM availing funding of $2.4 billion for network upgrades, the long lead times will delay the grid connection dates. That's affecting the commercial operation dates for some of the big three projects. And this is extremely worrying to me. Because what you've got here is a situation where, in fact, the IDPs are doing everything. They're actually coming on ahead of schedule. But because of delays in terms of the grid getting out to them, we're now going to have a delay of that power coming onto the grid. And this is extremely worrying. And I think that's up the point why ESCOM should not be in charge of the grid. There is a real perception, and it's borne up in some cases by reality, that ESCOM being in charge of the grid and being able to manage it as it sees fit can in fact prevent, be a barrier to entry for many IPPs, and that creates a disincentive for them to be operating in this field. Clearly, we need to ultimately take this grid away from ESCOM, within an independent entity, can still be a state-owned entity, but give that kind of independence to the grid so that we can have proper planning, so that actually the planning doesn't go according to ESCOM's needs, but in fact where the future demand and the future generation will in fact come from. So I'd be interested to hear your remarks on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Kleine, on that issue. And the Minister of Public Enterprises, she's still here, and the Deputy of Public Enterprises, and we will hear from them on those policy issues. But let's allow ESCOM
to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue around the cost-reflective tariffs, I think we have indicated that we believe that the consumers must meet the cost of the production of kilowatt hour of electricity. That would go a long way to ensuring a long-term sustainability of ESCOM. There are trade-offs. We need to ensure that as we move towards cost reflectivity, we do so in a responsible manner, in a manner that does not create instability in the system, in a manner that takes into account the affordability issues. And we think that government had devised some security nets to ensure that those that are not able to afford at the beginning are assisted in various ways. There has been issues around free basic electricity. There will be issues around ring-fencing certain poor communities that may not be able to afford, including dealing with the short-run impact on employment amongst others and the economic output, because it also means then that small business entrepreneurs will also feel the pinch. And we think there are options, policy options, that can be put together to provide a security net to cushion the impact of any increase in the price of electricity. But at the end of it all, the short-term pains that goes with a movement towards cost reflectivity are much better than the long-term implications of load shedding on everyone, including the economy. So we have to balance the two and find a way in the middle that we can ensure that as we move towards gradually towards cost reflective tariffs, we also cushion the negative impact on the poor. So affordable issues become quite important as well.
If I may, Jefferson, just to amplify this particular point. Movement towards cost effectivity is a process which requires a suite of measures, not just increasing the tariffs. That's very important to appreciate. The reason is because we have, in our study, established that in order to protect the consumer as effectively as possible, there needs to be a number of things that we need to do, not just talk about the tariff. So in our engagements with our principals, the Minister referred to the fact that we're talking to National Treasury as well as the DOE. This is the discussion we're having. This is a discussion of how to enrich the approach towards cost-effective tariffs by taking all the possible opportunities to make it possible to move in that direction. This includes supply-side measures as well as demand-side measures. So it's a very complex suite of engagement and that needs to take place for us to be able to move in that direction. And when we deal with the rating agencies, I'll come back and talk to how this is related to what the rating agencies have to say.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Are you still continuing, sir?
Yes, let me continue on the questions around...
Let's continue. We should mind time because we don't want to extend the meeting beyond the agreed time we have on the agenda.
There's an honourable member who asked about issues around skills development and transformation. What are we doing about that? We've got a full report that we will make available on the initiatives that we have taken. But yes, it's part of one of our dimensions of sustainability, the promotion of transformation of our economy through the spend of ESCOM that we are doing, inclusive of specialised groupings like women, youth, and the veterans. As well. Skill development issues, we are addressing those. We are indeed, we've got a program that has just produced about 60 engineers. We call them top engineers. And these are going to be deployed into our various power stations to ensure that we increase the capacity of maintenance and online maintenance specifically. So we are doing that already. The issues around the
illegal connections, I think we have indicated that we will engage with the relevant parties to find a solution to deal with those illegal connections. I think the solution will deal with the issues around the cost of production of the REDPs. I think it has come up again, issues around the impact of the downgrading. And the Chair, I know that you from an engineering point, you'll be able to explain again the concept of synchronization and the grid planning.
Yes. The one simple example I can give you.
Who first or you, Chairperson?
I will start first.
You start first, okay.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of synchronization and commercial operation, I just wanted to say, if you recall in the old days, when you bought a new car, you were told that you must break the car in, break the engine in. I don't know how many of us remember that, but I don't know if it only happened today, but the example here is that you needed to break the car in so you don't mess up with the engine, you don't overheat the engine and so on, over maybe about 1,000 kilometers before you can actually run the car at full flow. Now, this is something similar. You can imagine how complex the boiler and turbine generator combination is. So when the boiler is now in a position to produce the steam that is required to drive the turbine, then you have to couple the generator, which is the thing that produces the electricity, to the turbine, which is rotating. That coupling, which then ensures that the rotation takes place inside of the generator, is called synchronization. So you synchronize the movement and the turning of the turbine with the turning of the rotor, which is inside the generator, which then produces power electricity, which releases electrons to produce electricity. Now, that process, when you start to do that, you want to be certain that nothing is going wrong in the entire system. It takes quite a long time to make sure that the controller implementation is working properly, that all of the electronic connections that are there to safeguard the system, if I can put it very simply, are all working in sync. And because of the quantities of volumes of fluids that are going through the system, you can literally blow up the plant if you are careful about how you manage, how you ramp it up. So ramping it up over a period of time will then lead to commercial operation. But the point about it is that the plant is producing power. It may produce far less. You probably started with 100 megawatts when you started out the plant. And the plant capacity is up to 800 megawatts. So you'll be ramping up towards that, because, but you'll be producing power. That's the important thing. So the psychological barrier you'll have crossed of producing power in the first unit. So that's really what the difference is.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's allow Hulu to complete the questions, and then the deputy minister will follow on those policy issues which were raised by Mr. Reagan.
So on the issue of the IPPs, I think it's important perhaps from our side to indicate that Eskom is very committed and is fully in support of the entry of independent power producers. And we have been working with them, as we indicated in the CE presentation, that we have connected quite a significant number of them. The issues of the cost, I think, yes, is something that going forward needs to be resolved. And when we talk about cost reductive tariffs, is
that one so what you are saying, you have only access to the entire grid. Thank you.
So, maybe just to indicate, we did indicate yesterday that we actually have a department that specifically looks at how we can fast track the access of the independent power producers into the grid. However, what we are indicating is that from a cash flow perspective, yes, they are accelerating these independent power producers at a much quicker pace than we had anticipated, and therefore you see a mismatch in the cash flow, which is a problem for us currently.
And we do need to address it with the regulator. So during the application, we assumed certain timing, and they are coming at a higher pace. In addition to that as well, in terms of the strengthening that Honorable Khailin is relating to, it is really around how quickly can we actually connect them to the grid, because we need to do the planning
we need to have the investment available, the capital available to be able to strengthen the network as they accelerate. So those are the issues that we're saying we need to resolve them with the regulator and various stakeholders, because it is the timing of the cash flow from Eskom perspective, as currently Eskom is the off-taker. So I do understand that we do have an old fleet of assets, and yes, in terms of cost of production, it may be lower. But I think that is just the point, that these assets are old. They are actually, we are actually spending a lot of money to maintain them, and therefore we do need to move forward. I think on the issues of what the cost of Medusi and so forth is, we've done our qualifications, which obviously is different, but we can engage deeply on those things in terms of, you know, where are the differences that we're seeing. So we certainly do welcome the independent power producers. We certainly do welcome, we think that Eskom cannot do all of this alone. I think that is much appreciated. How do we come up with a sustainable solution? And I think it's the issue that we've said, we do need a solution package, and it is really a combination, as the chairman has said, of a number of things. The terms need to be looked at. We need to look at the liquidity in the short term. Yes, we do need to complete the capital expansion program. We do need to look at other funding sources, whichever form they come in. And that will give us a long-term sustainability for Eskom. And I think that's essentially what we are saying. What the rating agencies essentially look at, 50% they look at the Eskom's financial profile, credit profile, our ability to be able to repay the debt, and 50% they look at regulatory and policy certainty in terms of knowing that Eskom is intrinsically linked to the sovereign, and therefore do we have that certainty around whether we'll be able to generate enough revenue for them to be able to be assured that we will be able to repay them as our debt goes to. As I indicated, that we currently heavily rely on debt to be able to sustain our operations. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tulu. Chairperson, you want to add on?
There's just one question which was posed. I don't know whether I should be the person to answer it, but I'll say something about it, and I'll give all of the answers. The question was, what is the pay of the Eskom chairperson? My minister here, I'd like to refer to her as to what my pay is. But let me just indicate that person, because this is a contentious issue I've seen in the media. Let me just make it clear that the situation now with Eskom, with where it is such that it is impossible for me to hold down a job. I cannot do any other work except this one. I spend virtually 6 days a week on Eskom's business. So though I'm not a full-time employee of Eskom, I commit so much time that it is not possible for me to do anything else other than this. And I'm doing that voluntarily because I realize the need and the commitment that our people must be assured that we get this thing right. I'm not complaining about it, Honourable Chairperson. I'm just saying that let it be clear that, you know, despite what may be written on paper that we attend 4 meetings a year, which is not possible, obviously, we attend a huge number of meetings. As a board, as a board subcommittee, at these meetings and meetings other than stakeholder meetings that I have. And so I'm not the last person to justify the pay that I'm being paid. All I'm saying is that this job is not for sissies, quite honest.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Next day of the week with no overtime. Let's allow the Deputy Minister to make some input.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we do welcome the input of Mr. Khali, and I would like to say to him, the Minister has already made mention of the fact that we need to all of us debate the end state vision of the energy sector. The issues that you are raising, I think, are issues that are going to be debated, and are quite keen to debate them. Because also a view that says the only solution is privatization, I think is highly debatable. There is space for private sector participation in the electricity distribution. The CFO has said that, and we are quite open to that, and currently there is that space. But if everything we have one medicine for it, and that is to privatize and to pick up, of course, we are ready to debate it at an appropriate time when we discuss the end of stages.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. The Minister, you want to...
Because I think that last question is, of course, the policy decision that will be taken eventually. But we've got to find agreement on the optimal industry structure in the life of business. And that goes after we've actually made the decision about what the energy mix should be. There has to be a major boost to capacity to undertake the successful future goals. And then I think the decisions on the extent to which the future build projects will be undertaken by the private sector. Now, there have been a range of policy options and debates that have come up, whether it's the BDP that Eskom, BPP that Eskom has to undertake, whether it's public sector injection, whether it is part private sector injection. Logically, all of those aspects are aspects of the future funding of Eskom that must be taken on board, including process relativity, reflexivity, the cost of the client to Eskom. All of those logically must be taken on board. But that is a much longer term debate as well. I mean, it's very important for us because Eskom is just part of economic growth in the country. That it's not placed elsewhere other than within the state. But can the state partner? I mean, that's the question. And so I think, Chair, you've both chairs opened this debate for us to have. And my partner and Eskom, all of us, we say thank you very much to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. I think now we have adopted, not necessarily exhausted issues, because there are so many issues which we still need to talk about in relation to Eskom. But for today's purposes, I think we have done enough for the day.
Yeah.
And unless if there's any other issue which is a matter of life and death, then I can allow. If there's none, allow me to call our Chairperson of Energy, Honorable Majola, to make a closing remark.
Thanks. Thanks, Chair. I hope I'm not going to spoil your good Cape Town day with my closing remarks. Very early at the start of this, the discussions of the committees of the SLIF Democratic Parliament, Honorable Swelling did warn us that he hopes that there will be no ideological backlighting on these matters of how we approach the challenges of energy in our country. And I hope some of the proceedings don't take us down that road. I just want to, because we would remember, I just want to repeat at least two things related to that. One related to what Honorable Fleming was saying. The other one has got to do with how to respond to the immediate challenges we face. But as Commissioner President had called, the suite of measures that we need immediately to get out of the challenge that we immediately face. And I don't know if I can do this, but let me just read something that I said on the 21st. As you all know, the energy challenges our country faces are very serious and require urgent and decisive action. Many of these are immediate, whilst others will confront us in the long term. We have to take action now, but the actions we take today must not compromise the future security, and sustainability of our energy supply. The second was this, and Honorable Shirley, I'm sure will be happy to hear this again. that the ANC's policies are clear. Amongst others, the ANC will pursue the task of building a capable developmental state that intervenes and is capable of leading a process of fundamental social and economic transformation of our society. This policy approach will apply to the transformation of the energy sector. This is a commitment we have made, and this is a commitment we will keep. I'm raising that so that we quite open with one another when we have a discussion later on the detail of what we're trying to do, about what our fundamental starting points are in relation to all the challenges that we face. And it is in prior to some of the issues that we must recognize that our points of departure may be different on these questions, and in particular in relation to the role of the state. So I think, but we want to work together, as we promised in the past, that so we can find solutions to the immediate challenges we face. And we need help, Chairperson, that only because we need a balanced approach immediately now on how do we deal with the policy approach of keep the lights on in a way that is sustainable, because none of us want the kind of outages that we see happening. But how do we do this in a responsible way, in a sustainable way? How do we ensure that we avoid Eskom avoids the downgrade, a further downgrade? So I'm sure it's in all of our interest to ensure that we find a package that can respond to this, that as we do all of this, that we can secure Eskom's operational sustainability, especially plant sustainability, that and financial sustainability. So I'm sure the issues of cost-reflective tariffs is going to come in, and how we get there, we're going to have a big debate. So that's a matter that we're going to have to return to. Chair, I think it is true, as honorable members were saying, that we're going to have to work together with all the stakeholders. The two departments are working together now. The two committees are working together. We need to ensure that we can bring COXA on board to deal with some of the challenges. We can bring SARA on board to deal with the challenges that we face. But we also have to involve our communities and other non-governmental organizations so that we can respond effectively, so that we can have a shared understanding of the kind of challenge we face, so that we can respond collectively as a nation to the challenges that our country faces. So I want to end there, Chair, and I'm happy that synchronization has been explained now. It has been simplified, demystified. It has been so complex to me. I've been asking, what does synchronization mean? When do we get the electricity out of the unit? Now, I think this has been explained, so one is quite happy about that. Credit rating. I think it is important to understand also that as we did with the Eskom credit rating, that there are many other challenges that face sovereign credit rating that would impact. Especially for what we do with Eskom, if we don't deal with the challenges of facing sovereign credit rating, this could impact negatively on Eskom. So we don't have to adopt a broad approach, a balanced approach to all of these things. And I'm sure, Chair, thank you very much, that the two committees are going to continue to work together so that we can respond to these challenges facing our nation. Thanks.
Thank you so much. According to our watch, we are on time. We are on schedule. We are on schedule as much as the synchronization on the 1st of December. So we have started on a very positive note. We started on a very positive note, honorable members. Let's keep time. Each time we have meetings, we start on time, we finish on time. Thank you very much, and we hope to visit the facility not long, Eskom, so that we are able to check on all the issues you have responded us to, not only on operational issues, but also on governance issues. So we shall be exercising our role as the structure in the near future, but we will let you know. We won't come as like cops. We give you a notice, a long time notice, so that we are there, because our role is not to police you. It is to make sure we help one another in resolving the challenges in our role as we are doing the oversight and accountability of this entity. Allow me to close on that note, and thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen and honorable members. Thank you.